It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Boom. This is the Riverfront Bengals Show, episode 37. I am your lovely host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is my equally stunning gentleman, Greg Niemann. Greg, what's happening, man?
Nothing, man. Living the dream yourself.
I am ready to roll. We are doing this super late because we love you guys. It's damn near 11:30 here on Thursday night because we are dedicated to you, our faithful listener and viewer. We love you, Joey. Before we get going here on some awesome draft talk here, bit of the recap. If you're watching us on YouTube, like and subscribe. If you are listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcast, rate us. As always, consider joining us at patreon.com, Riverfront Cincy. A lot of cool benefits with that. The Slack channel that we have, that always conversation going on about movies, sports, Reds, Bengals, even soccer, anything. It's cool stuff. And once a month, we do an awesome hangout. Everyone just jumps on a big Zoom call and we just talk about whatever the hell's going on. It's a fun time. All that out of the way, let's get rolling. A little bit of Bengals news and notes this week. Not obviously there's a whole lot to talk about with the draft, but a little bit of personnel with the guys that are still around. Joseph Osai had shoulder surgery to repair his labrum. 4 to 5 month recovery. Should be ready to go by the time camp starts. And he also hyperextended his knee on the same fateful play in the AFC Championship game with the penalty with Patrick Mahomes. But again, both of those, he's not been present in any of the OTAs they've had over the last couple of weeks. But he's saying that he's in the recovery process and should be good to go by the time camp rolls around here in July. Logan Wilson, another candidate for extension, says that his team, his representatives, and the Bengals have had conversations about extensions. Nothing imminent. Also, his shoulder feels as good as it has before his shoulder injury and surgery in 2021. He had the same labrum surgery that Joe Osai just had. So that's something, obviously it's good to have a teammate that can kind of commiserate with, but you kind of get a feeling that Osai is going to kind of deal with a little bit of, I don't know, recovery, but he's not going to be full strength all this year. But it's something, that Wilson played through all season. You ever had any shoulder injuries or anything?
I've never had any shoulder injuries. The only thing that really pops into my mind is that with Osai, it could be a little bit more difficult. Obviously, being in the trenches, you're using your hands a lot more than, Logan Wilson isn't trying to get off blocks every single play. It's still very prevalent for Logan Wilson, but for Joseph Osai, it's going to be every single play. You're essentially bench press an offensive lineman. So hopefully the shoulder doesn't give him too many problems. But that would be my only concern, is the defensive lineman's going to be using it a little bit more.
Yeah. And I mean, even just your pass rush moves, ripping and swimming, just, how much, arms over and everything. You wonder how, you hope that, that just his mobility, that he's going to have the full range of motion in his shoulder, much less the strength, that's built back up to where he should be. But he does have some help along those lines that we will get into here in just a little bit. Did you know Jonah Williams is still around?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And apparently, I'm okay with it. Apparently things are going, the rough waters have calmed. That he's, they didn't draft any offensive linemen at all in this draft, which is a big surprise to me, but it's a sign that they're expecting him to compete. He and Zach Taylor have had conversations and everyone seems to be, I wouldn't say necessarily on the same page, but things have calmed down and he's comfortable being here for this year. Also seeing the amount of money that right tackles, apparently Juwan Taylor is going to stay on the right side in Kansas City, making $20 million a year. So Jonah can take that with a consolation that if he plays well enough on the right side, he can still get paid.
Yeah.
Him playing well bodes well for everybody involved. So,
yep.
Joe Mixon is also still around. Per Zach Taylor, his future is here in Cincinnati. I'm not surprised, but I'm a little surprised. What do you, you know, nothing has happened with, you know, him, them asking for a pay cut. At this point, if those conversations have happened, they know he's either going to accept it or they're not going to do it, because if they thought that there was for a second a chance that, you know, that he wouldn't be on this team, they probably would have prioritized the running back a little bit higher. What, you know, where are you on?
For sure. I mean, I think the fact that they didn't prioritize running back, or at least not a super high priority, tells me that I think Mixon and them are on the same page. I don't see any issues that are going to come from this. I think they're on the same page, and I think you'll see a pay cut at some point. That I think that will happen. And I think that, you know, Mixon wants to be here, and I think he sees the writing on the wall elsewhere as well. You know, Zeke Elliott's still out there. And I feel like if you were going to pick between Zeke and Joe Mixon, it's a comparable set there, especially for this point in their careers. So I think Joe Mixon is seeing kind of, you know, the grass might not be greener on the other side. And for the Bengals, I mean, they really just don't have a whole lot of options now that the draft is over. There's just not much left there. And if they were going to pull the trigger somewhere, somebody like DeAndre Swift, you would have thought, okay, you can rent DeAndre Swift for 1 year. He's only making $2 million. You got to give up a fourth next year. That would have been a move I would have kind of been able to see the Bengals making. So the fact that they were not even in that discussion just kind of furthers it along the line that I don't see Mixon going anywhere for the immediate future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he has a little more tread on his tire than Zeke does. Zeke was used a little more heavily and, you know, a few more injury issues, but he also has the baggage of the personal issues hanging around his neck. So, yeah, I mean, he sees peers that are, you know, having to take pay cuts or, you know, that are, you know, available on the free agent that are still sitting around. I still think, as a Bengals fan, as someone who wants the most explosive version of this offense, I still don't think he's the best fit. And I hope that they work in Chase Brown, who we'll get to, in a way that maximizes the full effectiveness of the offense. Mixon is still the guy in the fourth quarter that's, you know, going to be able to wear down the defense if you're just trying to melt the clock. He doesn't have ball control issues. He usually falls forward, and he's a reliable 2 or 3 yards if you need 2 or 3 yards. So it's fine. They could have prioritized an upgrade if they wanted to. I'm happy with the guy they got, but they figured out this is what they're going to roll with this year.
And I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago that we talked about, is Mixon going to be that number one back? I believe it was 2 episodes ago where I think we kind of came to the general agreement of Mixon will be the quote number one, but we could see him getting less than 50% of the total carries.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at. I think he'll be the number one, but I think you'll see a heavy dose of both of the backup running backs. I think you'll see Trevion Williams, I don't want to say a healthy dose, but I do think you're going to see a mix of it's going to be a running back kind of carousel, if you will. I don't think you're going to see Mixon get the ball 20 plus times a game, maybe not once this season. I really believe that kind of that 15 carries is kind of the sweet spot for Mixon at this point. 15 carries in a game is more than enough. I don't see him hitting that 20 carry mark. I think they're gonna spread the responsibility out and kind of work it by committee.
I would love it if they did that, because I mean each running back has, you know, specific different skill set. It isn't, I mean, even with Samaje Perine, who was limited in his explosiveness, he was still a really good pass receiver and a great blocker. I mean, he was excellent at picking up, especially the free runner coming up the middle. Something obviously that Mixon struggles with hardcore. It's more, not being an X's and O's guys as much. It looks more of effort than it does actual, the actual technique or anything, because it just looks like he just stands in front of the guy, and if he gets ragdolled, he gets ragdolled. But apparently of the running backs that were available to be drafted, Chase Brown was the highest graded, not asked often to block, but he had a pretty high blocking grade. So that's good to see. But again, he's a rookie, so you have to temper, he hasn't seen an NFL pass rush yet. So
right.
It's a good sign, but who knows how these things are going to work out in the long run. Last little bit of info, Trevor Siemian was signed as the backup, to compete with Jake Browning for quarterback 2 for the Bengals. He'd been in a couple weeks ago. I think there was probably an understanding that we'll get back to you after the draft. We have interest. We're going to see how the draft plays out. And obviously that's what happened. I mean, within, a couple of days of the draft, they picked him up, and I think it's a decent move. I think obviously if anything happens to Burrow, your season's going down the toilet if it's anything significant, but better than Brandon Allen, better than Jake Browning, I think he has the best chance of kind of keeping the boat afloat if Burrow had to miss a couple games for this, that, or the other. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised either way. We know they like Jake Browning. Wouldn't be surprised either way if Trevor Siemian does, in the end end up winning that job. I would not be surprised. But I wouldn't be surprised if they stuck with Jake Browning either. I think it's almost a move that you have to do, because you can't go into camp with Burrow and Browning and whoever's below that, when you sign some completely low level free agent. So, I mean, to me, this move is common stance. I think something like this was going to happen. They weren't going to roll in with just those two. So you knew something was going to happen. I mean, I think this is par for the course. And if Jake Browning is what they think he is, then okay, let's, prove it a little bit. And I think this is only a good thing for the Bengals. A little bit more competition, and we welcome it.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, you at least need that third arm for camp days. I mean, you've got so many, you've got 90 players on your roster. How many receivers are out there? You can't have your top, you can't have two quarterbacks thrown to all those guys. Their arms are going to fall off by the end of August. I just look at his actual numbers, touchdowns to interceptions, and they're, for a backup quarterback, they're decent. I mean, it's only completing 57-58% of his passes. But again, I think it's 28-21 touchdowns to interceptions career. And I mean, that's fine. I mean, he's won some games. He started a bunch of games in his career. Best game in his career was against the Bengals when he was on the Broncos. He threw for over 300 yards and 4 touchdowns a few years back. He's worked with Brian Callahan before in Denver. So yeah, he's behind Browning in terms of Browning's been in the system a couple years and understands the offense, but he's worked with the guys. So he's got someone in his corner knowing that, that he's got the mental acuity to be able to pick up the playbook, in relatively short order to make himself useful. So, that's pretty much the end of non-draft news for the Bengals this week. We're going to touch a little bit on just the NFL draft as a whole in terms of the greater league. Any surprises? We'll kind of limit this more to early rounds or anything like that, but any surprises or trends that kind of you weren't expecting?
I'll give you two, one that I was expecting and one that I wasn't. Will Levis falling out of the first round was amazing to me. Indy taking Anthony Richardson. I don't understand the Anthony Richardson love. The guy completed 53% of his passes in college. In a high IQ system, it's not like they were running a bad system. He had a good offensive coordinator. Completing 53% of your passes it's appalling. I mean, it's appalling. And you think he's going to come to the NFL and be better? I just I don't understand. He had athletes around him at Florida. Again, it's not like he's playing at Southern Miss and doesn't have anybody around him and playing better competition every week. It's mind-blowing to me that Anthony Richardson went 4. And I know everybody talks about combine numbers and all that stuff, but combine numbers to me for a quarterback are like the least useful numbers. I mean, the fact that you run a 4.440, I mean, it just doesn't matter to me as much. No. When I want you to deliver the ball from the pocket, if we're going to be a highly successful team. And I thought, I thought it was good for Levis. I think he ended up in the right spot. I think that is a perfect system for him. But I was surprised that he got out of the first round. And I think for me, it was just, I think the three teams at the top decided they wanted quarterback. And I think everybody else said, well, we're not going to be in those sweepstakes. We're not going to pay that price. And I think eventually the Titans just said, oh my gosh, he's still here. I guess we got to do this. So that was the surprise for me, was Anthony Richardson going 4 and Levis falling all that far. And then the one that was not surprising to me that we had touched on last episode was that we thought the tight ends would not fall, but slide just a little bit because it was so top heavy with tight ends. And I think we saw that with not only the Bengals pick, but other than the Bills going Dalton Kincaid in the first, to me, it looked like basically everybody said, I'm not going to go tight end in the first because I can get one in the second that is equally as good or equally adequate. And I think those teams were right. So I think the tight end slide a little bit was expected. So that I expected. The Will Levis drop, I really did not.
Did you think that – were you kind of surprised that Dalton Kincaid was the first tight end off the board? I mean, Michael Mayer was pretty much – maybe not consensus, but he was probably received as much or, you know, more hype than any of the other tight ends that were draft eligible.
I was surprised that Kincaid was the first one off the board, but I also was not surprised because I thought if Buffalo took the first tight end, it would be Kincaid because they wanted the pass catching receiving tight end, which Kincaid is more of than Mayer. So I thought, for what Buffalo wanted and wanted to fill, I thought if they took the first tight end, then Kincaid would be the first one off the board. So I'm not surprised that they took Kincaid, but I do think overall Michael Mayer is a better tight end than Dalton Kincaid overall. But when you're speaking to scheme, you know, Dalton Kincaid fits with what the Bills want to do with him better than maybe Mayer would have. So yes and no, I was and I wasn't.
I kind of feel bad for Mayer because he was pretty clear that he wanted the Bengals to pick him. Whether, you know, obviously everyone wants to go in the first round. There's more money. There's the guaranteed fifth, you know, the option of the fifth-year guarantee. Apparently, he wasn't even one of the first two guys on their board. They had Kincaid and Laporta both rated higher, or at least what's been leaked out. Again, those three are, to me, pretty interchangeable. Same with Musgrave. I mean, there were a bunch of guys that were, you know, really close. And again, like we talked about, that's why it wasn't surprising that with all that talent that they dropped, because the value isn't really there for tight ends in the first round. But, you know, those guys started to come fast and furious second round on. I think I was not surprised that Hooker lasted until the third round. Again, this isn't so much about production, so much about projection. He's 25 years old. We went on about this. They're guys that old, quarterbacks that old are not successful. And at least as a third round pick, the team doesn't have a ton of, they don't have a ton of capital tied up in him. So if he's not successful, they can move on from him. And that takes a little bit of the pressure away from him, you know, from having to perform, you know. Now, again, with somebody that age, you would assume that he would be, you know, that he would be able to step in and start maybe quicker than an Anthony Richardson. Excuse me. But, you know, he's going to the Lions. They've got an established quarterback. Jared Goff he's a roller coaster, but Is Jared Goff still going to be a starting caliber quarterback all through 2023? Probably. So does Hooker take over?
I would think so.
Yeah. So is he going to take over when he's, I don't know Goff's contract situation off the top of my head. I would assume he's probably near the, he had such a weird contract that, that has carried over. So does he take over next year as a 26 year old? It's, you know, I don't know. Like it's, you know, now the one thing
I think the interesting question to me about Hooker, cause it doesn't surprise me that he went in the third. The only interesting question I have is what would have happened if he didn't tear his ACL? How would that have played out? I don't know. I think it, maybe he moves into late second, mid second kind of territory. But I think the ACL combined with the age, I just think made it a little harder for teams to be able to take giving up that draft capital for something that A, you're going to have to wait on a little bit, and B, he doesn't have a whole lot of time to wait because he's older. So I think if he would have been healthy, it would have been a little bit more of an interesting scenario to what would have happened. But the ACL, I think, definitely hurt him. Definitely cost him some spots.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's good for him that he's going to a place that, you know, has kind of a system, you know, support system behind him. That offense is electric. And if he can get up to speed, if anything happens to Goff, and again, he's been, you know, been a roller coaster. He's had some terrible seasons in there. And if he struggles or if he gets injured, I mean, he can step right in. He's got a fantastic receiving core. He's got a couple really good running backs, including, we'll get into running backs here in a second. But you kind of feel bad that he's in a situation like there's not an immediate path to starting, and he's just getting older. Like he's not maturing, he's getting old. So,
but overall, I do think the Lions are as good a spot as any for him. I mean, you're coming into a pretty good situation. Now, you might not be immediately the starter, but I do think you're coming into a good situation, and I like the coaching staff there. I think they're, player friendly. The players seem to love them. So I do think Hendon Hooker's going into an interesting situation that's probably pretty good for him.
Yeah. To me, it's just looking at like a direct pathway to playing time, and it might be there, like not immediately, maybe, you know, again, maybe next year. And if they struggle, maybe they'll phase him in, you know, down the stretch. But this is a team that's expected to contend, and they've got a veteran quarterback who had a great year last year. I'm not a Jared Goff stan, but I mean, he was lights out last year. So anything close to that, and then he's just sitting, getting another year older as, you know, as a backup. They let Jared go. If they make the playoffs, if they go 12-5 this year, I mean, that division's kind of wide open. You don't know what you're going to get from Green Bay. Minnesota's not as, you know, clearly nowhere near as good as their record was last year. Bears were the number, you know, were the worst team in the league last year. You expect that they're going to make a leap, but is that leap to 7 wins? I don't think they're contending for the playoffs this year. So if they, you know, if the Lions go 10-7, 11-6 and win the division, are they going to want to push Goff out to start, you know? So, yeah. Oh, well, that's a problem for another team, not for mine. We've got a quarterback. We're happy with that.
We got a quarterback. We're good.
Exactly. I was a little surprised, not much, but a little surprised that Anthony Richardson went for 1/4 overall. Clearly, I mean, I said last time that I thought he was going to fall because, again, like you just said, 53% completion. They talk about how, you know, obviously all of his measurables and he, you know, athletic freak, had the highest testing numbers of any quarterback, size, strength, speed, etc. But they say he's got great pocket presence and pocket awareness, but you only completed 53%. Like that's it takes someone smarter than me. Would, you know, it doesn't take a lot, but you know, you need to explain how, you know, are we just looking at Josh Allen as being the prototype for huge guy, crazy athleticism, or accuracy issues in college that will just get ironed out once he gets in a pro system? I mean, is that the assumption? I mean, it's one thing to hope or to look at that as a template, maybe, you know, try to poach some coaching or, you know, stuff like that off the Bills or, you know, guys that were around him. But can you expect that? That seems a lot. I mean, you need to complete 65% of your passes to be an effective quarterback.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is Josh Allen was at Wyoming. I mean, you can see some like flaws in the offense. Like, Richardson was at Florida. At Florida. I mean, you're playing with 4 and 5-star receivers. You're not going to have 10 drops a game. You have an offensive line in front. There's just talent around you. I just don't understand it. What this tells me, and I firmly believe this, if they're the NFL is a copycat league, number one.
Yeah, obviously.
It is a copycat league. And I think we saw that in quarterbacks this year more than we've ever seen it before. You had Anthony Richardson going 4 because of measurables, which is hilarious to me, a quarterback. Now, if you're talking about a receiver's measurables, I get it. Okay, you want a guy that's fast. You want a guy that can jump. You want bigger hands. You want measurables at quarterback do not help you deliver the ball on time and accurately from the pocket. It just doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
And I think these draft guys get caught up in these pro days and watching Anthony Richardson throw to guys that he knows how they run. He knows the route they're running. There's zero defenders. There's no pressure in your face. There's no pressure from the edge. You're not pre-snap reading the defense. There's a million other things I can go to that you don't have to do to throw a pro day. Anybody with a good arm can have a great pro day. That has nothing to do with you being a good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you're throwing against the air. I mean, there's no coverage. I keep going back. Do you remember Kyle Bowler with the ref by the Ravens? His pro day when he was at Cal, he was on both knees at 50-yard line and threw the ball through the uprights, 60 yards from his knees. Mm-hmm. Great. He was a terrible quarterback, and they drafted him in the first round. Like, again, arm strength and this wow factor is – quarterback isn't the place for it. Yeah, if you have someone who can run, who's got the running ability of Michael Vick, of Lamar Jackson, that's great. But if you're playing quarterback, you need to be able to get the ball on time. You need to be able to make your reads. And again, I don't watch a lot of Anthony Richardson tape. I can't say, you know, was he making the right reads, or was, you know, why the completion percentage was so bad. And there has to be something to it for everyone to take him that high. I mean, Will Levis was a similar, you know, not quite, you know, he was Anthony Richardson light in terms of all the measurables and everything. And he went to the second round and he had a more productivity in college, we'll say, even with a somewhat of, you know, supposed down season his last season. So
yeah,
it's weird. Who was your best pick in the first round?
My favorite pick of the first round is, and I think it's somewhat risky, but I like the risk versus reward. I thought Jalen Carter falling to the Eagles at 9. That guy is an absolute monster and a freak. And the fact that the Eagles, the situation for me makes it a good, the great pick of the first round. If he was drafted by, let's say, the Falcons at 8, I'm not loving that pick because they're not, they're not heavy leadership, ready to win now. What the Eagles have done, basically funneling everybody from Athens, Georgia to Philadelphia. When Jalen Carter walks in there, if he acts like a clown or does something stupid, there's going to be 8 guys that he's maybe not friends with, but that they have a relationship together. There's going to be 8 guys that can look at him and go, Jalen, you're being an idiot. If you don't stop, I promise you, this is not going to work out for you. I just think for the Eagles, it's such a great situation. And I think that the Eagles players respect Jalen Hurts tremendously, as they should. The guy's a winner, done everything right in his life.
Absolutely.
I just think the situation for that pick, getting him at 9, getting a monster that you can bring into a system that he doesn't, number one, he doesn't have to be the guy. They'll still be good without him. Yeah. So we can move on without you, or you're going to get on board and do it our way. And I think he'll get on board, and I think he'll do it their way because he's going to have peers that he's familiar with, and he's not going to feel attacked if they say, you got to change this, you got to change that. You can't be going out and doing this and doing that. I think that it's just a perfect scenario for Jalen Carter, and I think that'll end up making it a perfect scenario for the Eagles, and I think they'll greatly benefit from that guy still being there at 9.
Yeah, I kind of went the same route as you. Same team, same college. They love their Bulldogs. I mean, they're Philadelphia Bulldogs, or the Beagles, we'll call them.
Yeah.
I went Nolan Smith falling to 30, and he's in the perfect spot. He gets to learn right behind Hassan Reddick. And this is another explosive edge rusher. They've got so many of those guys. That, you know, last year they led the entire universe in sacks. Excuse me. And now
they had four guys with over 10 sacks last year.
Yeah, something crazy like that. And that's even with them bringing a couple old guys off the street, old tackles, Ndamukong Suh, and who else did they? I can't remember. I'm trying to look real quick. I know they brought in. What's that?
There was one more guy. I'm trying to think of who it was.
Fletcher Cox is their own guy. Linval Joseph. That's right. From most of his days in Minnesota. So, yep. and they don't even have to bring those guys back because they're just replenishing with this electric guys from the draft. I mean, there was a lot of talk about rival executives getting kind of tired of Howie Rose, Philadelphia's GM getting all of this pub. And there's a reason for that. I mean, he's killed it the last couple of years. They were in the Super Bowl last year, and they get two first round picks this year because of wise decisions, and they blow it out of the park again this year. So it's, they're set up to be a really good team, and there's nobody else in the NFC. The NFC is just maybe the 49ers, but who's quarterback in that team? Is Brock Purdy? Again, Brock Purdy of 2023, 24, 25 isn't Brock Purdy of 2022. That was just a weird flukish. I'm sorry. I just don't see any way. He was a end of the seventh round guy for crying out loud. Those guys don't come in and immediately become that guy, permanently. They can, have flashes. Mm-hmm. They just have such a great system. But again, now you have Trey Lance. What's Trey Lance going to do? So, but again, outside of those teams, there's nobody in the NFC that's going to be legitimate contender. I mean, Cowboys are fine. I mean, Giants are decent. Again,
You would have to think the Lions are legitimately. Are they a top five team in the NFC? I mean, a top four, top five team. I mean, it's
do they do enough on defense? Their defense was atrocious. Their offense is, I mean, they're polar opposites. I mean, they've got just this electric offense, but defense was just awful last year. And they've made some moves, but I don't know if it's enough to make them legitimate contenders. The other teams are just. They'll be in the playoffs because seven teams have to make the playoffs.
We talked about Brock Purdy with the Niners, and we were talking about this copycat league, and this just jumped into my head. One of the most amazing things this year was talking about the NFL being a copycat league. The amount of quarterbacks taken late in the draft that I thought there's no way this guy gets drafted. I mean, one that pops off of into my head is a Cincinnati kid, went to Cincinnati St. X's, Sean Clifford from Penn State.
Yep.
He's a fifth round pick. I mean, no offense to Sean Clifford, but I mean, a fifth round pick. There was so many quarterbacks taken that I thought no chance. And it was the Brock Purdy effect. All these people think they're going to pick up a late round, rookie of the year guy, a quarterback. It was mind blowing to me the way the copycat of the NFL took over for these guys drafting these quarterbacks in just ridiculous places. Ridiculous draft capital to give up for these guys.
Yeah, Andy Dalton Jr., Max Dugan going in the seventh round. He's going to the Chargers, who obviously have a set quarterback room, so he gets to develop, but. Dorian Robinson Thompson from UCLA. I never really saw much from him, but there was talk about the Bengals being interested in him, getting him late in the draft. He went higher than what I thought it was going to be. Eagles getting Tanner McKee in the sixth round. Yeah, in the sixth round. And it's like, why? What? Get guys elsewhere. Like these, I don't know. Like it's. I don't know. If you believe that that's a route that you can go, then get a guy undrafted free agent and spend that on something else.
Yeah. That was one of the most peculiar things that I think I've ever seen of the NFL draft. I mean, Sean Clifford was a guy at Penn State that for his final 2 years, the talk for Penn State was, when are we going to bench him?
Yeah.
You know, the fans wanted him benched. And now you're a fifth round pick?
Yeah.
I mean, it's mind blowing. It was literally mind blowing to me. So you have another local kid from here around the area, Northern Kentucky kid, quarterback from Minnesota, Tanner Morgan.
Yeah.
He signs an undrafted free agent contract with the Steelers.
Yeah.
To me, I see Tanner Morgan as a better quarterback than Sean Clifford. And Tanner Morgan went to
college.
Yeah. And Tanner Morgan went undrafted and Sean Clifford goes in the fifth. The quarterback thing to me was just absolutely wild. And I did not understand it other than it was the Brock Purdy effect. Everybody wanted to take a quarterback late and somehow strike gold. And I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah. You look for, like, they're fine looking for a specific trait besides just a scrubby go-getter like Rudy, you know,
right.
Like, no, these guys are, you know, they're going to be street for, you know, on the street probably by next year's draft. So,
yes.
Who is your worst first round draft pick?
My worst first round draft pick was Quentin Johnson of the Chargers. I think the Chargers need a receiver. The problem is, I think they missed. This guy in big games in college, time and time and time again, did not show up. Just absolutely did not show up. And the more physical teams got with him, the worse his production got. And the NFL is, you know, more man-to-man than college, obviously. I would be stunned if that pick works out. I just thought that was a really, really bad. I thought it was a bad pick. I thought they reached. Zay Flowers was available. Jordan Addison was available. Two guys that I would have much rather had than him.
Those guys won the very next two picks. Zay Flowers at 23 or 22, and Addison at 23.
Yep. Yeah, I guess they did. Yeah. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba went at 20 and started the wide receiver run. And I think the Chargers panicked and took they tried to take the big-bodied receiver because they want that prototypical big-bodied receiver, because I think they've had so much time with Keenan Allen where they're dealing with Keenan Allen being injured because, you know, Keenan Allen's a great receiver, catches a bunch of balls, but he's smaller. And I think they said, we got to get away from this. We got to have a guy that's going to be there every, you know, he's going to be ready to play every week. Quentin Johnson's going to be ready to play. Problem is, he ain't going to get nothing done. I did not like the pick. I thought there was many other receivers they could have taken that would have had much more production than what Quentin Johnson's going to do.
Well, and all the receivers are relatively, like, they're all tall receivers. I mean, Mike Williams is 6'3", 6'4". Quentin Johnson is 6'3". And Keelan Allen, yeah, he's a little slight, but he's 6'2". I mean, one of those guys is going to have to, you know, play more, you know, run more slot routes. Or any of those guys have the shiftiness to play in the slot? There are going to be so many fastballs that Justin Herbert lets go because he's got a rifle and he isn't the best at turning it down a little bit. There's going to be so many passes to go right through his hands and right into the hands of the safety bracketing him or something. And it's, yeah, I really think you're right that they panicked because they saw the quarter or the wide receiver run, and maybe they didn't want Zay Flowers because Zay Flowers is a small guy. He's 5'9", but Jordan Addison is 5'11". He's not tiny. And I mean, I think that would have been a lot smarter play.
I thought Zay Flowers would have been a super interesting pick for the Chargers. Let's say, you know, we're assuming here, but let's say Austin Ekeler stays in LA. You have Austin Ekeler and Zay Flowers, and now you really have, as an offensive coordinator, you have all these weapons that you can move to all these different places. I mean, if you put Zay Flowers in the slot with the receivers they already have and Austin Ekeler, I just feel like, wow, man. I mean, look at what I have here. And I thought they missed the boat.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying to diversify your, you know, the type of skill set that you have on your team. Again, they're all bigger receivers. Now, Keenan Allen's 31. Mike Williams is 28. They're getting older, but It's just an odd fit to me. I don't disagree. For me, the worst pick is Bijan Robinson, eighth overall. Not that I don't think he's going to be a great player, but that's way too early. Saquon Barkley going second, that was way stupid early. Even if he immediately becomes the best running back in the game, maybe middle of the first round, if you think that guy is the that he's going to be the absolute best player in the league. But man, and then that caused the Lions to jump early on Jahmyr Gibbs, and Gibbs was someone that I think the Bengals would have been very interested in if he was available at the towards the end of the first round, and he went off the board at 12. I mean, it really surprised the hell out of me. I mean, most teams get it. Like running backs, you can, but it's not the best allocation of resources to draft them in the first round. You can get a more premier position, and let's not act like that the Falcons didn't have needs elsewhere. But
yeah,
let that guy go, and if he gets picked, fine. Then you can get a running back, get Zach Charbonnet in the second round, or if Gibbs would were to fall in that bag instead of starting the run that early. It's weird. That being said, now they've got a pretty talented top three on offense for my boy Dez Ritter. I mean, they've got Bijan Robinson, they've got Kyle Pitts if he's healthy and can kind of reclaim some of the form he had his rookie year. And Drake London, I mean, that's the start of a solid core. You've got a couple decent linemen there, but
Don't forget about Tyler Allgeier.
I mean, that's the other reason I thought it was weird. I mean, he was a fifth rounder last year and got over 1,000 all purpose yards, and Cordarrelle Patterson's still there. There's nothing wrong with adding more weapons, but at that position, weird.
To me, they almost want to lose for one more year, and they're gonna get their quarterback next year, which would be a good quarterback draft with Caleb Williams and Drake May. I am not a believer in Desmond Ritter. I never have been. I just don't see it. I don't think he's an NFL. I think he could be a backup, but I don't see him as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I think that the way Atlanta drafted, it was almost like, well, let's just go get home run guys. We're going to lose again. And then we'll get our home run guy at quarterback. And then we'll start playing. That's kind of how it felt to me.
The only problem with that is they're in the NFC South. They can go 8-9 and they're going to win the division.
Yeah, you're
right. They won seven games last year, and they did not have a talented team. So this is they're going to win 7-8 games this year. They're not going to be in the position to draft one of the top two quarterbacks next year, and then you're stuck. I think Ritter is he'll be a placeholder quarterback, a guy that I think he'll be able to, if the talent holds out there and everyone stays healthy, he'll be able to be more of a point guard, just dish the ball out, Andy Dalton light, if you will. He's not going to be I don't think he's going to be terrible. I think he's an incredibly sharp guy. He's got a lot of athletic ability. You see him run. I think he ran a 4.4, which again, like, that doesn't matter for your quarterback skills, but if someone has that ability and you scheme it up and design runs and everything, he can be a weapon. I think they're going to win the division. So that's, a lot of people have said that they're kind of gearing up to draft, but you have two games against the Buccaneers. I mean, are the Saints going to be that good? And then you got the Panthers that are starting all over. I mean, that's they're they're in the right division to luck their way into playoffs.
Oh, 100%.
With 8 or 9 wins. So,
yeah, 100%. I mean, trying to pick the winner of that division is, good luck. There's a lot going on there and not a whole lot of talent.
You want Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield helming the Tampa Bay Bucks?
Listen, I don't like Desmond Ritter, but I'll take Ritter over Mayfield and Kyle Trask.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, just real quickly, one of my favorite kind of later round draft pick, Tommy. I wanted the Bengals to draft him, but I should have figured the pronunciation on this guy's name. Adiba Ware, I think. He was a kid out of Northwestern, defensive tackle, three technique, which is a position that I think the Bengals definitely could use some more more juice behind. He was a guy that was talked about after his combine testing. I mean, he ran like a 4.5 at 280 pounds. There was talk that he might make the back end of the first round, definitely the second round. He fell all the way down to the 111th pick to Indianapolis, 56th on Dane Brugler's big board. So I think that's an absolute steal that they got. Who do you have as your late round steal?
Maybe not late round steal, but I thought it pulled on my heartstrings. I just thought it was a really cool moment. I mean, if I was a father and that was my son, it would just be the coolest moment of my life. And I'm not a Cowboys fan, obviously, but when the Cowboys drafted Deuce Vaughn and the running back from Kansas State, and his dad called his son and said, "Hey, son, do you want to come to work with me next week?" I just thought that was a really cool moment. I just can't imagine having a moment like that with your dad getting drafted into the NFL and he's the one that gets to call you. I just thought it was really, really cool. And I don't know the next time we'll see a moment like that. So I just thought that was the coolest moment for me in the late rounds. That one tugged on my heartstrings a little bit. I thought it was neat.
Yeah, it was a nice move by the Cowboys organization to let his dad make the call to him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good pick. He's tiny. I mean he's Darren Sproles sized, but he's got a lot of juice. He's going to, if they utilize him right, and they've got Tony Pollard, put him in packages. I mean, as gadget plays and as a returner, I mean, he's going to be absolutely electric. I think he's going to have a long career. So on top of being a cool sentimental pick, I think it's just a really good fit. I mean, just a fun player to have. So shall we move into the Bengals draft?
Yes.
Let's move on to the Bengals draft. Real quickly here, I'm just going to run through the picks and then we'll break them down a little bit here. First round pick 28, Bengals got Miles Murphy, defensive end out of Clemson. And real quickly, I just want to say something.
Okay. Pick.
Mm-hmm. More likely, maybe Miles Murphy. I called it. I'm right.
Touche.
That's going to be the title of this episode. Draft recap. Joe was right. Second round, they got cornerback DJ Turner out of Michigan. Third round, they traded back three spots with Kansas City. So at least the front offices can get along, even though the fan bases kind of hate each other. Added a pick, pick number 217 in round six. And then with that traded pick, they got Jordan Battle, safety out of Alabama. Fourth round, they got Charlie Jones, wide receiver out of Purdue. Fifth round, Chase Brown, running back out of Illinois. Sixth round, Andre Yosivas, wide receiver out of Princeton. Sixth round was the second sixth round pick, the one they picked up from Kansas City. Punter Brad Robbins out of Michigan. And seventh rounder was DJ Ivy, cornerback out of Miami. Who do you think was your best fit? Was your best pick out of the entire all eight selections?
My best pick, you know, obviously looking at value of where you drafted them and things of that nature, I thought Charlie Jones from Purdue was a really, you know, the more you look at him, the more you watch his film, holy cow, man, this guy can play. I really like that pick. I think obviously it's more, you know, we don't necessarily need him right at this moment. So it's a luxury pick, but I think it's a really, really solid fourth round luxury pick for the Bengals. And I think the kid will be able to help you in certain ways, punt returning. He's obviously a nice punt returner. They're going to be able to do some things with him where he's going to be able to help in small ways, building into a larger role here next year and down the line. But I thought that was a really, really nice fourth round luxury pick.
I think he's actually going to get a lot more run sooner than we realize. Last year, all three wide receivers missed some time. Higgins missed a little bit of time. Like it came out a couple games with concussions. T missed a handful of games with the hip injury. Tyler Boyd got knocked out a couple times, and we saw a lot of Trenton Irwin. And love me some Trenton Irwin, but what does he really provide you with? He's got, you know, pretty sure hands, but he's not like, he doesn't have a lot of special teams value. He's not an absolute burner. He's fun guy, nice guy, but you absolutely, like, you raised the floor of that wide receiver room with Charlie Jones. they run a fair amount of four receiver sets, and he's going to take over for Tyler Boyd next year anyway. So I think he's going to get a fair amount of reps. I didn't look up because the guys, because the big three were kind of in and out of the lineup a little bit. It isn't really useful to see how many routes Trenton Irwin ran, or, you know, whoever was specified as the fourth receiver, but he's going to get, he's probably going to get 10, 15 snaps a game at minimum, you know, not counting any injuries or anything. He's got absolutely just fantastic hands. I think he had a 2% drop rate, which is amazing. Just strong hands and sure hands. Again, great returning ability. And the only, I don't want to say complaint, the only thing that I was kind of looking for more was the ability to run away from guys. His yards after catch isn't there. I mean, he catches the ball and then he gets tackled. That's what I was wanting, you know, selfishly looking at someone like Tyler Scott from UC or someone of that ilk, but those guys, they're faster. They can run away from the secondary a little bit better. But most of those guys, especially at that point in the draft, you're going to have a bigger issue with hands. They're not going to be as sure handed. So I think you're right. I think it's a really good pick. For me, it just starts at the top. Miles Murphy, perfect storm of need. Bengals need, you know, the Trey Hendrickson is, I believe, going on the last year of his deal. Sam Hubbard isn't getting any younger. They didn't have a ton of pass rush juice as a word. I mean, they think they're 30th in the league in sacks last year. They needed to get more production out of the at rushing the quarterback. Again, there's need and fit and the prospect sliding. So you get someone who was expected to be gone somewhere in the middle of the round at the end of the round. And then you look at the actual size. He is the typical Bengals Lou Anarumo defensive end. I mean, he's stout. He's 6'5", 270 pounds. He's someone who can hold up against the run. And they don't – I think they could have in the past kind of gone for smaller guys. Carl Lawson was a bit of a smaller defensive end. I think he was 6'2 or 6'3, shorter arms. But, you know, he had that speed and quickness. But you see how much they valued him. They let him walk and replaced him. So – he fits the size of what they like, and he just has some freakish athletic ability. The only, I don't want to say but the thing that you wouldn't want more is the production didn't escalate the way that you kind of would hope it would. Because when he was a freshman, I mean, you look at his numbers and like, this guy's going to be an absolute monster. This guy's going to be Myles Garrett. And I don't think he's going to be Myles Garrett, but I think he's going to be a starting out this year, a solid rotational piece. He's going to be able to move inside. He's big enough to move inside when on a pass rush downs. That's going to be a fun front, by the way, with you're going to have Osai, yes, Hubbard, and Miles Murphy inside and Hendrickson on the other side. That's a lot for teams to try to account for. And then if you rush five, you bring a blitzer from somewhere, they're definitely going to pick up their sack numbers this year.
That's why I thought it was a really good pick. That exact reason, that he can move inside. Obviously, you're going to need him to play in at some point. You know, you got to, we're going to have to move on from somebody at some point. That's going to happen.
For sure.
But the ability of him being able to move inside added so much value to that pick for me, because you're a Bengals franchise that you're trying to win now. Yes, you're trying to plan for the future as well with him at defensive end, but he checks both boxes. He can help you win now. Plus, he can check the future box of defensive end. So I thought that added value was massive. I thought it was a really good pick. Selfishly, I wanted Michael Mayer because he's the local guy. But when they took Miles Murphy, I'm not going to lie, I was not upset. I thought it was a really good pick.
I was actually surprised that he was still available. I wasn't home when the draft was going on. I was at coaching baseball at the time. So I was just trying to catch back up with, you know, with where the picks were. And I don't think I was even, I had really paid too much attention to who was still or who had been picked, who was still around when the Bengals went on the clock. So when I saw his name came up, I was actually kind of surprised. Again, like, I was hoping, you know, I had kind of thought that that's where they would go if he were available, but I kind of didn't think that he'd still be available. So it's, you know, it's just a smart pick for a team that has, and it's going to have so much money tied up on the offensive side to get somebody on the defense that, you know, that's going to be a day one contributor and can, you know, be a 4 or 5 year guy. And even if they, you know, draft and replace him if they, you know, if they still have all that money tied up on offense. Like that's a hell of a start right there. So who do you think is your worst pick?
I'm stuck because I just don't know that they had a bad pick.
I'm not gonna
say that the sixth round pick of the Princeton wide receiver, I'm not gonna grade that as a bad pick. I think anytime you're drafting in the sixth round, you're throwing a dart at a board anyways. Yeah. I mean, maybe you go offensive line there, but is that offensive lineman really gonna help your depth? I don't know. That would be the only pick that I could look at and go, I don't really see what box that checks off, but it's a sixth round pick. So I don't think it's a, I don't think it's a bad pick. I really think the Bengals hit a bunch of home runs or doubles or however you want to call it. I just don't know that they had any bad picks. I actually got a text from my mother. What'd you think about the draft? They took a punter in the sixth. And I said, Mom, we needed a punter. If you remember losing to Kansas City last year, Drew Chrisman punts the ball right down the middle. They return it out to the 50, and one play later after a penalty, they're in field goal range. So yeah. Theoretically, if we had Brian Robbins last year, that game's still happening. That punt cost us our season. Our punting game was horrendous. So drafting a punter in the sixth that has great hang time, that's going to limit returns. And now when we do get stopped on offense, we can punt it to them and say, okay, you get the ball right there. You get the ball at the 25. You caught it there. That's where you're going to get it. This guy has incredible hang time. I thought the punter pick was one of my favorites. When you can pick up, and I know it's only punter and it's only special teams, but when you can go to the sixth round and say, that guy's definitely going to start for us. If you can pick that up and it makes your team better in the sixth round, do it every time. Granted, it's a punter, but the Bengals were atrocious at punting, and now you feel like they will be up to the standard of the NFL with everybody's punt team. I feel like the Bengals can limit returns now, and I just feel so much better about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fair catch waiting to happen is what it is, because of that hang time. I have zero problems with them drafting a punter. You knew that's what they were going to do when they picked up that extra pick. I don't think they would have drafted a punter. I think they would have tried to just pick up the best undrafted free agent if they hadn't have been able to pick up extra picks. But as soon as that was, they're going specialist. It's funny because specialists started going in the third round. Kicker drafted in the third round, punter going in the fourth. And it's kind of like, what in the – I don't know if you remember when the Bengals drafted Evan McPherson, people were kind of losing their shit because they drafted a punter or a kicker in the fifth round. Like, this is fifth round is probably a decent, a good spot for the best kicker. Now, Justin Tucker, best kicker in history, was undrafted, but that's not a bad pick. But you've got guys that are, challenging Sebastian Janikowski for, highest pick. Now, granted, no one picked him first, but I mean, specialists kind of went off the board weird. So to be able to get this guy who he had some injury issues last year, his numbers before injury and after injury are markedly different. And you're assuming, he's healthy and going to be the guy that he was earlier. I've got no problem with that pick at all. My only, and I don't want to say worst pick, but questionable pick, Jordan Battle in the third round. Super productive player. He started 4 years at safety for Alabama. Not Alabama, Birmingham, not Oregon State, Alabama, like the best football school in the entire country. He was a captain. There were three captains that Alabama had. Jordan Battle, Will Anderson, and Bryce Young. So that tells you everything about his acumen, about his, how well he's thought of, the kind of leader, the kind of person. And we know the Bengals, like, they adore getting drafting leaders, drafting captains. That was a 2000 draft. I forget which draft it was, 2020 or 2021 draft, when four or five of the draft picks were captains of their college team. Mm-hmm. So, this is a trait that they love. They want leaders of men. They want guys that love the grind. And his measurables, I mean, he – he had like maybe a little better than average 40 time, but nothing spectacular. But then you look at his play, and he's just a tackling machine. I mean, some of the play, just quick instincts, great player. But the question was drafting a safety there in the third round when they drafted a safety in the first round and signed Nick Scott, and Tyson Anderson's coming back off of. So to me, it was more of just, was that a position that they needed? And again, with Adebowore or a tight end or running back on the board, it was just kind of curious to me. Again, I'm not saying it's a bad pick, but it was the one that kind of raised my eyebrow more than any of the others.
And to me, this is, we sort of talked about this or kind of made mention to it that we trust in Lou, you know, Lou Anarumo. We're going to trust in what he believes. But there was a comment that Lou Anarumo made before free agency started, where a reporter asked him about if you were to lose Von Bell and Jesse Bates. And his response was, I hope we don't get to a point like that, that we lose both of those safeties because of the leadership qualities, the good characteristics those guys have, not just as football players, but as people. And I think this was Lou Anarumo, he was putting a very young leader in that clubhouse in the secondary. That's a super, super young secondary for the Bengals. And I don't think Nick Scott's going to come in and be the leader of the secondary. I think Jordan Battle can come in and be a leader. To me, this has me a little worried about what they think about Dax Hill. It has me a little worried, not tremendously worried, but the fact that they wanted to bring in a guy that was a leader, that had a lot of experience, kind of a safe-ish pick, you know what I mean? The ceiling isn't, you know, that high, but the floor is up there. I thought this was Lou Anarumo's safety net, if you will, for me.
See, I think this was more of a more about them thinking that Nick Scott isn't going to step in and be a starter. Jordan Battle is very much in the same mold as Von Bell. Now the Bengals, with as much as they love versatility, they don't have a free safety and a strong safety, but it's very clear. You look at Dax Hill's athletic ability. You look at his, like what he's best at. He's a Jesse Bates replacement. And you look at Jordan Battle and he's a Von Bell replacement. So I think that's more what it, you know, I don't know if it really means anything about Dax Hill. Obviously his rookie year was uneven, lacking, and kind of weird for as much as they hyped him up and as well he's played in the preseason, as little as actual playing time he got. But I don't, you know, I still think that they're counting on him to be that guy that they drafted.
I guess I need to clarify. I don't necessarily mean that it has me worried about Dax Hill as far as playing. I think the leadership aspect of it.
Okay.
I think they wanted a guy that was a leader that was going to be in charge. And I don't know that Dax Hill is that guy. Now I'm not saying he's not, I don't know, but the fact that they brought Jordan Battle in to me was like, all right, like you really aren't a first year NFL player. When Jordan Battle gets on your roster, he's played as many games as, you know what I mean? He's played as many games as 26-year-olds in the NFL. So I think from a leadership standpoint is where it had me a little worried about Dax Hill. Maybe he's not that leader, but maybe he doesn't have to be if Jordan Battle's there. That's kind of where I was going with him not feeling questionable about Dax Hill.
Oh, I'm gonna remember 2 years ago, or I guess 2021. Jesse Bates was the captain. He was a team captain. Last year, Von Bell was a captain. So it's, you know, they've had two guys in the same backfield that were team captains. So I think just the more the merrier. Again, and not everybody's cut out to be a captain. I mean, some people are better soldiers than they are leaders, and that's perfectly fine. I mean, you need leaders at specific spots. Like you need your quarterback to be a leader. And I think, you know, I think you need a linebacker to be a leader because those, you know, those are the more traditional, like, leader of men, follow me into battle guys. But nothing wrong with having a guy who's just going to put his head down and you know, just bust his ass and do his job. So are you surprised that they didn't draft any tight end or offensive lineman?
Offensive lineman, yes. Tight end, not necessarily. Tight end is one when they brought in Irv Smith Jr. You saw him bring Drew Sample back. Yeah. When they brought Drew Sample back, that was a clear sign. Of course, hindsight's 2020 now that the draft is over. But I think
you see the bigger picture.
Yeah. I think the Drew Sample signing, once you put all the parts of the equation together, I'm not shocked about tight end. I would say I'm more shocked about offensive line, which is why I said that sixth round wide receiver from Princeton. I would have rather just maybe thrown a dart at the wall with a lineman somewhere and see if maybe you could add some depth, but I'm not going to say it was a bad pick. So I was definitely more surprised with offensive line not being addressed at all than I was with tight end.
I kind of look at it. I was kind of the other way around. I was more surprised that they didn't get a tight end than an offensive lineman because, yeah, they did set themselves up that they have two experienced tight ends, at the top of the depth charts. But after that, you would think that it wouldn't have been on the radar to try to get a developmental guy or some, again, thinking someone down the line, third, fourth, fifth round. And maybe it was just a matter of the guys that they wanted going ahead of them, and they just didn't value it enough to want to jump up and, get someone, reach for somebody. You look at their history with drafting offensive linemen, it's just piss poor.
Sketchy at best.
Yeah, first round, seventh round, undrafted. So why waste draft capital on that? We forget Ben Brown, undrafted free agent they got last year. He would have been a fourth, fifth round pick if he hadn't had a knee injury. He's fully healthy. He's coming from Ole Miss. He's probably in line to be your backup center or interior offensive lineman. You have Cody Ford. I know they said he's part of the right tackle competition. It's weird because he was given an interior offensive line number. But presumably he's going to be, a backup guard. For tackles, you have Orlando Brown. You have Lyle Collins. I think Lyle Collins is probably going to – I don't know what they're going to do with him. I wouldn't be surprised if they either cut him or try to restructure as he's battling his way back from his injury, maybe waive him and then try to bring him back later. Because that's not a huge cap hit. I mean, they already have they've got their roster set, but that's money that you could allocate again, just moving money around for Joe T. Logan, whoever. You've got Jonah Williams, you've got Akeem Adeniji. They give Jack Carman. They actually have a fair amount of offensive line depth for once. Trey Hill, I think he's going into his third year backup the center from Georgia. I think he's probably on his way out, and Dante Smith, but any of those guys that they would have picked up in the sixth, seventh round going to be any better than those guys that have, that have been in the system? I don't think so. They've actually have depth, which is a scary thing to say. I mean, it's their offensive line isn't high ceiling, but the floor is a lot higher, and they have backups that have seen time, that have seen a lot of snaps, and that's, and we thought we had a functional backup guard, Max Sharping, and he was absolutely
not so much.
Yeah. He was fine in the Buffalo game because it was snowy and slippery and they couldn't get their footing. The offense has the advantage there. And he was a turnstile against Kansas City. And again, you're facing Chris Jones, but I don't know if there was depth that was there that they thought was going to be better. So it's not surprising to me that they passed up offensive linemen.
A little bit of what this tells me, and actually as you look at the numbers more of how much they throw to the tight end, I think a little bit of this is Joe Burrow does not – I'm guessing. Joe Burrow does not prioritize tight end. I don't think Joe Burrow is going to Zach Taylor saying, man, we got to make sure we have, super solid tight end room. I don't think Joe Burrow's too concerned with who his tight end and who his tight end is. And I think the fact that he earned CJ Uzomah a 3-year, $24 million contract kind of proves the point that I mean,
doesn't matter.
Why? Yeah, I mean, does it matter? Because CJ Uzomah is not a 3-year, $24 million tight end. Hayden Hurst is twice as good as CJ Uzomah, and I'll take Irv Smith Jr. by a landslide over CJ Uzomah, and that's with Irv Smith's injury history. I would still take Irv Smith. So
this is when you consider cost.
Yeah, 100%. And I just think that I to me, I really don't think Burrow, I don't think that's one of his priorities. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he has Zach Taylor's ear. If he wanted a tight end, if he prioritized having a tight end, they would have gone, you know, they might have gone stronger to hold on to Hurst, or they would have gone after, you know, someone bigger in free agency or drafted someone higher. I think he wants someone who is a reliable outlet, but has there ever been a pass pattern, at least in the past 2 years, maybe even the past 3 years, where the tight end is anything more than the third option, even fourth option? Because I mean, turns out Joe Mixon's pretty, you know, pretty good receiver coming out of the backfield. Maybe tight end's the fifth option. You know, you've got three really good starting wide receivers. You're going to get more juice, you know, more explosive, you know, presumably out of your running back, you know, if you don't have that athletic freak of tight end. So yeah, I mean, I think it's clear, you know, that they just don't prioritize it, which is fine. Again, I mean, use your capital, you know, use your capital where, you know, where you're going to want and where it's going to be useful. So where do you think they go from here? Again, they brought, after the draft, they brought in Simeon, backup quarterback. You think they bring in another tight end? You think they're going to call Mitch Wilcox or you know, or someone else?
Yes, I do. I think Mitch Wilcox will be with the Bengals. I don't know if it'll be when the regular season starts, but he'll definitely be in the mix. I think he'll definitely get a shot. So that would be the one thing I see. If they can snag a low cost option, either one or three technique. I think if they can get an interior defensive lineman that's a low cost, low risk, or low risk, high reward kind of guy, almost like when they traded Billy Price to get BJ Hill. If they can find something similar, a guy that's kind of being cast off somewhere that they can use in their system, or a free agent that's lurking out there that they feel good about that they can get for low cost on the interior defensive line, that wouldn't surprise me. But other than that, I don't know that I see them bringing in another running back. I think, you know, with Taylor saying that Mixon's going to be here, you get the Brown pick and Travion Williams, Chris Evans. I just think you have enough there to, you know, pick and choose what you want to do. I don't think they need to really stress there. Offensive line, we've talked about, there's some depth there, maybe a guy. But I think what I'm trying to say is the Bengals had such a formidable draft to fill a bunch of, I don't want to say holes, but little boxes that you kind of wanted to, you know, check off or at least feel better about. I think they did such a good job of that in the draft that I don't think they're really hunting for a whole lot. If something comes up that they feel like, okay, maybe it could make us a little bit better, yeah, we'll do it, but we're not hard pressed up to get that done.
Yeah, their depth on defense is pretty damn amazing. The only place, again, that I think that they're most definitely going to bring somebody in is going to be, the defensive tackle spot. Again, probably at least the three technique, because BJ Hill should not be playing that many snaps. I don't know of anyone. I think they're expecting Zach Carter to make a bigger leap in year two. He kind of came on stronger as the year went on, but he was an end at Florida, so he had to adjust more. You know, I'm sure he had to put on some more weight and strength, just, you know, to be able to anchor a little bit better. They still have Josh Tupou as DJ Reader's primary backup. He gives you a little, you know, he's steady against the run. He doesn't give the push. He doesn't push the pocket anywhere near what DJ Reader does. I was surprised by how well Reader pushed the pocket this year, by the way. I mean, for someone that's that size and that strong, to have that quickness, it's almost unfair.
He's a monster.
Yeah, he's just so damn good. A guy that I can see them bringing in, and he's still available, is Matt Ioannidis. He played on the Panthers last year. He's, 29 years old? Yeah, just turned 29 this offseason. I think he'd be a good depth piece. Again, he's not going to cost much. If you want to go the last year's Philadelphia Eagles route and get older guys, those two older guys are still available if you want to get Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh. Again, those guys that they're not going to sign before season starts. They're going to be picked up somewhere week four, week five when injuries set in. At their age, obviously, they're not going to want to go through the rigors of a training camp or anything. Just give them a couple weeks to get in football shape, and they'll be ready to, you know, play a handful of snaps. So outside of that, I think they'll pick up another running back just for another camp body. I don't think that they feel great about Chris Evans.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's a shame to me because the guy had a lot of promise. His ability out of the backfield. I never was a great running, like great with the ball rushing, but just his ability out of the backfield catching and everything. I mean, he runs routes. He's got, shake defenders like a wide receiver, but whatever reason, personality, I don't know. There was supposedly some issues. I mean, he just struggled to grasp the playbook. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have someone else on the roster and Chris Evans is cut before a cutdown. They don't even have final cutdowns. They just go straight from 90 to 53 now. Obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not here. So, but outside of that, yeah, I mean, they're pretty well set up except for a couple, a couple trimmings and then just a handful of camp guys. They got a lot of undrafted free agents that came in. A couple tight ends, a couple running backs that were pretty interesting. I'm not going to waste my time spending too much breath on them because, again, the roster is pretty full, but interesting guys that will probably make the practice squad at least. So outside of that, anything else that, struck you from this draft? Anything, any other thoughts on the draft, on the world at large? Anything like that before we get out of here for the week?
I have three final thoughts that all popped up, as we were talking. The first one, which this is more of a previous nightmare here. We were talking about offensive linemen, and we're talking about the Bengals, history of drafting offensive linemen. And the only thing I could see in my head was Andre Smith running that 40-yard dash.
Oh my God!
That's the only thing I could see, and I didn't want to see it. I couldn't unsee it.
That's night terrors.
Yes.
Just so odd. You ever again, you're probably not the Simpsons fan that I am, but there's something that like the Homer Simpson's at the doctor and they kind of Dr. Hibbert flips his stomach just to see how long it takes. And it's just going and going and going. And he's like, look at that blubber fly. And that's exactly what goes through my head. Just man breasts because he thought it was everywhere. Smart to run it without his shirt. Yes. Oh God, that's
that was my first final takeaway is Andre Smith. maybe we shouldn't draft another lineman ever. The second takeaway I had was, we're talking about who's gonna be the third running back. We're talking about the backup quarterback situation. We're talking about interior defensive line depth. We're talking about offensive line depth. We're talking about secondary depth.
Yeah.
What this means, guys, I know we're not used to it. We're good. The Bengals are good. And it's been so long in my life where we just haven't been, where we're talking about who's going to be the left tackle, who's going to play center, who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to play corner when they throw the ball out there. We don't have anybody stopping. For the first time in my entire life, we have a legit roster, and I'm so happy to be talking about the third string running back because we're legit. And I just want to take this moment as Bengals fans, we need to appreciate this, okay? Because I'm 33. It took me 31 years to get to this good ball club. And the 31 years to get here were rough. Carl Pickens, Corey Dillon, Darnay Scott, Brian Simmons, Takiyah Spikes. We can go through the list of names that were very, very hard years. So I'm going to embrace this moment and say thank you to the Bengals. We are good. I appreciate the effort that's being put forward. I love what's going on. So that was number two. Number three,
this roster is just fucking loaded. I mean, it is absolutely loaded. The Bengals have probably the most depth of any team on defense. Oh, by the way, they still have Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins. We haven't mentioned any three of those names this entire episode. We're 80 minutes in, and that's the first time we've mentioned those three names who, you know, just the best number one, number two quarter or wide receiver and quarterback combo in the entire NFL. So, these are rare times. So, I mean, for any team, much less one that's just so downtrodden. And hell, I predate you by 9 years. I remember the 88 Super Bowl, and that team wasn't this good. I mean, they had good players, but you can't look at every level of the defense and find multiple players at each level. Multiple wide receivers, multiple running backs, just an absolute stud quarterback. And it's like, wow, the last 2 years weren't a fluke. Bengals are just a damn good team. And if you trust them, when did you ever think you'd get to a point to where you can say, I trust the organization to make the right moves?
When was the last time you trusted them to win the end of the game? I mean, when we lost to Kansas City in the AFC Championship, I was hurt. Not because we lost or that, I was mad at the Bengals. I was hurt because I thought we were going to win that game the entire time.
I was stunned.
When we're losing AFC championships and we're like, man, we had that one in the bag and this one slipped away. In the previous 33 years, if a game slipped away, and don't act like you've never said this, because I know every Bengals fan has said this. When the game slipped away, you said, I knew that was going to happen. I already saw that. I saw that yesterday. I knew that was coming.
Andy Dalton's going to throw a pick or Jeremy Hill is going to fumble.
Oh, literally any way you can lose. I mean, we get a 15-yard penalty in the against the Steelers when their coach is at midfield yelling at us.
Right.
I mean, we find ways that are just unfathomable to lose. That is gone. I've let that go. We're not, when we lost the Kansas City game, I didn't go, I knew that was going to happen. No, I was, man, that hurts.
Like, shit. That's not supposed to happen.
We could have had it.
That's not supposed to happen. They didn't play well, and I still expect them to win.
Yeah. And then my third and final point is, because I have to look at myself in the screen every day, I guess they tell me I'm starting to look homeless. So I think for next week, we're gonna have a haircut. We'll have a nice haircut, and maybe I won't look homeless next week, and you guys will feel better about it.
We're starting to get some people wondering where they can donate to the cause for you, Greg.
Yeah. Yeah, at Greg Neiman right there. Yeah,
you're still the second most handsome gentleman on this show, Greg.
I like being in the top five. I'm good.
I kid. Well, folks, that pretty much wraps up everything we have for you this week. We will be back at some point whenever there's news coming out on the extension front, but it's a long off season. On the 11th, so that is next Thursday, is the schedule release. So we'll probably be back late next week, probably same time next week to have a reaction and kind of have an update of when and where the Bengals are playing next year. Outside of that, you guys take care.